Thank you, Eric. It's a privilege to be here today. When my wife and I, many of you probably don't realize this, but when my wife and I moved to Altoona in 2012 to start Overflow, we were actually in town for 15 months before we had our grand opening. And during that time, we got to visit quite a few of the churches in town and were able to worship with you several times that year. And just want you to know how appreciative I am that we live in a city with churches like this that are running after Jesus and have a passion for people to know Jesus. I know sometimes people wonder, why did we start a new church? And I really believe that there's only one church in this city, and that as we run after Jesus together, that people are going to come to know Christ. And but as we already see in this city, oftentimes when new people come to know Christ, it births new churches that are not in competition with one another, but are working side by side, running after the same mission. And I know you already know this, but you have an amazing pastor who I consider to be a great friend. But what you might not be aware of is that I do not believe we would be experiencing the unity in the city that we're experiencing right now if it wasn't for Pastor John. As I shared last week, those of you that were at Saturate Altoona, the pastor's prayer gathering really started at a moment of discouragement. I knew that if we were going to reach this city for Christ, the church had to be unified and we had to come together. But for whatever reason, it just didn't feel like there was an interest in working together. It wasn't that anybody was against it. It's just that nobody was really prioritizing it. And when we invited pastors to come that first Sunday, which you can go ahead and put the picture from that first Sunday at the prayer gathering, when we invited pastors to come, most responded with negativity, saying, why in the world are you praying at 6:30 in the morning? Let's just go to church and preach and gather. But Pastor John showed up that first Sunday. And I do not believe that we would experience the unity that we have today if it wouldn't have been for Pastor John, Pastor Tim McGarvey at the Altoona Alliance Church, and Pastor Walt, each of which are individuals that have served our city really, really well, that have legacy and credibility that Derek at the Vineyard and I did not have. And so I am incredibly grateful for the way that God has just laid unity on Pastor John's heart and the way that we continue to work together. And I believe with all of my heart that if the church continues to come together, we're going to experience God do amazing things in and through our city. As you know, this month is Saturate Altoona, and we are gathering as one church all across the city in one place on Sunday nights to celebrate what God is doing. And this month, as we celebrate the unity in the churches, we put together a mission statement and a value statement for what is happening. And I just wanted to take a moment to read over and just continue to cast vision for what God is doing in our city. As we gather this month, our mission statement is churches working together in unity without conformity, so that everyone is cared for, prayed for, and has repeated opportunities to hear and respond to the gospel of Jesus Christ. We're gathered together around Jesus, pursuing Jesus together. And as we shared last week at Saturate Altoona, I want to remind us that unity is not the goal. Unity is merely the thing that takes place when we run after Jesus together. You see, the closer we get to Jesus, the more he continues to change our hearts. And you know what? Like, one of the things, as I was getting ready to start Overflow and getting the chance to visit the different churches, you know what? We look different. We act different. We have different ways that we do things. And you know what? That's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing. And in fact, oftentimes, it's our uniqueness that allows us to reach into different segments of our community. And one of the things that I'm passionate about is getting the church as close to lost people as possible. That's why our church has helped start other churches. We started The Cord, which is a church that meets at the Hope Drop-In Center that's specifically running after those in the mental health community, because we want to get the church as close to those in the mental health community as possible so that they can be a part of a full expression of the church. But their church looks a little different. But that's not a bad thing, because we're working together. And when we begin to understand that working together in unity doesn't mean that 2 years, 10 years from now, all the churches look exactly alike, that's not the goal. Now, the goal is to unite around Jesus and allow him to work in and through us. Last week, the focus was unity of the local church. This week, the focus is going to be on shared kingdom resources. What does it look like if we as the church begin to realize that the gifts that God has given us is not just for our church, but it's for his kingdom? And what does it look like when we allow God to show up and do crazy things when it's not about me or us, but about him? And next week, we're going to look at celebration without competition. I don't know if you've noticed it, but the church in North America has become a little bit competitive. We like to compare our churches. Well, does your church have this? And does your church and our pastor's better than your and all of this? But one of the things that I love about the unity that's taking place in the city is that we celebrate the wins, because when one church wins, we all win. Did you know that when somebody gets baptized at Transformation Church, that First Church wins?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Did you know that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you know when someone across town comes to know Christ, and maybe you had a gospel conversation with them, and then someone at 4th Street Church of God had a gospel conversation, and then that chain just continues to go on, and they might come to know Christ and they might be in another congregation in the city, but when someone crosses the line of faith, there's a party in heaven, and there should be a party in the church in our city regardless of what congregation they end up in. And when we can get to a place where we're more concerned about people coming into the kingdom than we are about how many people are in our church compared to other churches. Now, don't hear me wrong. Like, when Awakening shows up and revival breaks out in our city, we're all going to run out of chairs. It's not about that, but the problem comes when we're all running after the same people. And the problem comes when we're trying to say, well, I know you go to this church, but I got to convince you that my church is better. Because we're on a mission to love the people in our city that don't know Jesus and invite them into a relationship with Jesus. And when we realize that we've got the same mission and the same Lord and we're on a team, then we can begin to see God work in mighty ways. And the last week, we're going to talk about gospel saturation. My wife and I moved to Altoona because there's 290,000 people in our region that don't have a connection to a church, roughly 50% of the population. Do you realize that when you leave this building and you go out to lunch or you go home, that 50% of the homes that you drive past do claim no affiliation with the church? I'm talking about individuals that come Easter and Christmas do not feel an obligation to show up at church. Talking about individuals that are spending their entire lives with no connection to a church, no understanding of who Jesus is. And that breaks the heart of our Savior. Do you realize that the very reason that we're still here in this broken mess of a world is because there's people that Christ has not given up on? We're gathered in our buildings on this Sunday morning, and right now Christ is with the homeless on the street. He's with the family that's about ready to go through a divorce. He's with the child whose mother and father are hungover from drugs last night. He's with the successful business person that's just too busy and has other priorities. And the world looks like he has everything together, but his insides are falling apart. He's trying to get through to them and help them see that he loves them. And we, as the church, we have a responsibility of living in such a way that it causes those around us to become hungry and thirsty for Jesus. This week, as I said, tonight, Pastor Jim Balzano is going to be talking about sharing kingdom resources. And as we talk about what it means to share kingdom resources, I thought this morning we would make it a little bit more personal by talking about what does it mean to have a kingdom-focused life. You see, tonight we're going to talk about collectively as the church. But I can't stress it enough that as we talk about what it means to share kingdom resources and what we talk about what it means to live in the kingdom collectively, I can't express it enough that we live collectively in the kingdom as each of us individually put Christ first. And sometimes we get lost in the shuffle because we talk about it, well, that's somebody else's responsibility. But do you realize that Jesus is inviting each of us individually into a restored relationship with himself? In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus said, "Seek the kingdom of God above all else and live righteously, and he will give you everything you need." Seek the kingdom of God above everything else. What does it mean for us each to put our relationship with God first and foremost above everything? You see, the relationship that Jesus invited us into is a relationship that is all-encompassing, that takes all of our life. We live in a culture and in a day where we've come to practice what is referred to as dualism, this belief that our sacred life and our secular life are two different things. We live in a culture that has made it perfectly acceptable to show up to church on Sunday and walk out of these doors and live like everybody else. Craig Rochelle calls it Christian atheist, who acknowledge on Sunday that God exists, but live their lives of it as if God doesn't exist. And if I'm honest, I hear a lot of murmuring in the church with religious people because we're upset about all those sinful people messing up our country. We have a big problem with the way people outside the church live. But you know what? People outside the church live the way we should expect them to live, because they don't know Jesus. Like, why do we expect people outside the church to live as if they know Jesus? The problem isn't that those in our community are living sinfully. The problem is that we in the church aren't placing Christ first in our life. And what does it mean to place Christ first in our life? As Eric said, I'm a fourth generation missionary, and I have been fascinated by missionaries and what God is doing around the world from the time I was a little kid. And as a teenager, I read the book Hudson Taylor's Spiritual Secret. If you're not familiar with Hudson Taylor, he was a British missionary to China is instrumental in many ways for the church in China becoming what it is today, which, if you're not aware, the church in China is the largest church in the whole world. There's more Christians in China than there are in North America. There's more Christians in China than there are people in the Communist Party. The church has actually outgrown the Communist Party, and God is working in powerful ways. Last I heard, there were 80,000 people coming to know Christ each and every day. And many attribute it back to the work of Hudson Taylor. Hudson Taylor moved to China at a time when everybody thought that if you want to become a Christian, you have to become a good European. And Hudson Taylor was so broken for the lostness of China that he was quoted as saying, "In everything not sinful, I will become Chinese so that the Chinese can encounter Jesus." And so Hudson Taylor left the comfort of the coast. He began dressing like the Chinese. He moved in the same living arrangements as the Chinese. He began eating Chinese food, which in my opinion is a pretty good thing. He adopted the lifestyle of the Chinese in everything that wasn't sinful. He found all the good things in the Chinese culture so that he could share the gospel with the Chinese. And God just moved in powerful, powerful ways. And over his lifetime, he was able to send out over 800 missionaries that went to inland China. They started over 150 schools. Or 125 schools, they started 300 new mission stations across China, and they were in 15 provinces by the time that Hudson Taylor died. And God just moved in miraculous ways as he entered into China and established the gospel. And while his book was amazing, the thing that caught my attention was at the very end of the book, the author summed up Hudson Taylor's spiritual secret. He said, "So do you want to know what Hudson Taylor's spiritual secret was? You want to know why he experienced God move in miraculous ways and why so many people came to know Christ during his life?" He said this. He said, "Hudson Taylor's spiritual secret was this. God came first in Hudson Taylor's life. Not the work, not the needs of China or the mission. Not his own experiences. He knew that the promise was true. Delight thyself in the Lord, and he shall give you the desires of your heart." As I said already, we're not running after unity for the sake of unity. We're running after Jesus. The longer I'm in ministry, the more and more I'm convinced that God is simply inviting us to pursue him, and he will do the work through us. If we want to see this city turned upside down, we don't have to become more creative in the way that we do ministry. All we have to do is run after Jesus and put him first in our life and give him permission to work in and through us. It's just running after Jesus. And if we would simply come to this place where we realize that the only thing that God is asking of all of us is to put him first and allow him to do the work in and through us. He said, to seek first the kingdom and to live righteously. Now, maybe you're wondering, what in the world does righteous mean? Well, the simplest definition I could find was a state of being in proper relationship with God. Do you realize that Jesus Christ died on the cross not so you could go to heaven when you die? Now you're like, wait, what in the world? Yeah, when you die, you're going to, if you place your faith in Jesus, you're going to get to spend eternity with God. But Jesus didn't die on the cross so that we could go to heaven when we die. Jesus died on the cross so we could have a restored relationship with God. And you know what? That starts now. Do you realize that restored relationship with God is not something you wait till you die? It's something that we get to experience now. And for Christians, we understand that sin is a big deal. But here's the problem. We think sin is a big deal in other people. And we've become so consumed with other people, and we think that they're the source of our problems. But the real problem is that we're more concerned about their sin than we are about our sin. And if we would simply come to a place where we pursue Jesus and we give him permission to change and transform us, and you know what? The longer I walk with Christ, the more and more I find that he's more concerned about my sin than other people's sin. And I don't know about your life, But when I first came to know Christ, I thought I just had a little bit of problem with sin. And then I come into a relationship with Christ and he turns the light on. And I realize, oh, I got a lot more problems that he needs to work on in my life. And what distinguishes someone that's running after Jesus from other people is that we're the people that are giving God permission to set us free. And so may we be a church that not only runs after Jesus and puts him first in our life, but we give him permission to begin to change us and transform us. And that's the beautiful thing about what God is inviting us to. God is not a God that comes into our life and says, you've got a lot of problems and you need to fix it if you're going to walk with me. That's not the message that God is calling us to. The good news of the gospel is that your life is a mess, and without God, it's a total train wreck, but God. God is offering to come into our life, and growth and maturity for followers of God takes place as we get in the habit of hearing and obeying, listening and obeying. Maturity for the Christian is not through Bible knowledge. We all have Facebook friends that have lots of Bible knowledge, and they're jerks. I mean, we know them. And we all have Facebook friends that have all kinds of Bible knowledge, and they point out all this sin in other people, and all of us are just shaking our head. It's like, well, you got just as much sin as they do. Like, I look at your life, and it doesn't look like Jesus. You see, growth and maturity comes in the life of the believer when we start giving God permission to speak into our life, and to change us and to transform us and mold us into the people that he desires us to be. Because when we do that, then he makes us holy. And you know what? What this city needs is more and more individuals that look like Jesus. They need individuals that when they look at you, they're like, I don't know. I don't know so much about that Jesus guy you keep talking about. I don't know if I believe in God yet, but I cannot explain what I see him doing in your life, and I can't explain what I see him do in your life. Francis Chan said that when the church is unhealthy, people say, I like Jesus, but I don't like the church. But he said, when the church is healthy, they say, I don't know if I believe in God. I just can't explain your life. And may we get to a place in Altoona where those outside the church begin to step back and be like, oh, if that's what it means to follow Jesus, can you tell me more about what that is? Because I want that. May we be people that are living in such a way that it's making those around us thirsty for God. This verse is a verse that has a command and a promise. Seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added unto you. Do you realize that God has everything he needs to accomplish the task that he's called us onto? Everything he needs. We talk about shared resources, what it means to see our city come to know Christ, but we forget that God has everything that he needs. The question is, will we put him first and allow him to use the things that he's already provided? He has far more than he needs. Several years ago, I read the book Reese House Intercessor. It's an amazing book. I'd highly encourage you pick it up. You can pick it up on Amazon, and it's a book that has radically transformed my prayer life. Reese Howes, if you read his story, there's just countless stories of miracles and answered prayer. And he was someone that had a reputation for just praying before God, and just crazy things happen, and everybody around him is just sitting and is like, that was God. God. But you know what caught my attention the most in that book? It wasn't the fact that he saw all these miracles. The thing that caught my attention the most in the book was that one, Reese Howells had a deep conviction that he couldn't ask God for anything until he had spent time seeking God's will. He didn't go before God and said, God, you need to heal so-and-so because they're sick. He would spend weeks and months sometimes just saying, God, what is your will in this situation? You know what? Sometimes he would go back to that individual and say, I really believe that God has said that he wants to use your sickness to display his glory to those around you, but he's not going to heal you. And then the second thing that challenged me in that book was the conviction that Reese Howells had that he could not pray asking God to provide for a need if he already had the resources to meet that need. If he saw a homeless guy on the street that didn't have a coat, he couldn't go home and say, God, you need to provide so-and-so with a coat when he had two coats in his closet. And you know what? If I'm honest, because I'm guilty of this as well, we've gotten too comfortable in the church praying for God to provide for things when we have the means to provide for it ourselves. And I really think that we need to reprioritize things in the church where we begin to realize that everything that we have is God's. It's not ours, it's his. We're stewards of his resources. And when we come to a place where we stop praying for God to show up and we start saying, God already loves this city. He already cares about this city. God's already at work in this city, and he's already provided everything that we need to accomplish the task that he has. Our part in it is twofold. As we seek the kingdom and as we learn to live righteously, is to come before God and say, God, what is your will for this city? What is your will? Not what is my will, because I have a lot of things I would do, but what is your will? And how are you going to provide? And when he taps us on the shoulder and says, you know what? I already did provide. It's in your backyard and you're not using it anymore. It's in your closet and you're not using it anymore. Or when God comes to you and says, you know what, that business that I provided you with, that was never about you. That was about how you were going to bless everybody in the city. And right now you're more concerned about the vacation you're going to go on. Or maybe we get to a place where we begin to realize that the things that God has placed in our life have more to do with what he's wanting to do through us and how comfortable we are. Because I know as Christians, we spend a lot of time praying, God, get me out of this situation. And sometimes we just need to pray, God, what is your will? Oh, you put me here so I could have a gospel conversation with my coworker in an uncomfortable situation? Because you're more concerned that they come to know you and spend eternity with you than you are about how difficult I am in a dysfunctional situation. Did you ever think that God might actually give you a job at a dysfunctional place because he wanted a lighthouse in that place? Did you ever think about that? So I ask you, will you join the church across this city and across this region as we run after Jesus together? As we allow him to change and transform us, and will you give God permission to use the resources that he's placed in your hand?